Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality, with your host, David Gagan, engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and I'd like to welcome you to today's show titled The Psychic Lawyer. Our guest today is Mark Anthony, a practicing medium and a successful attorney licensed to practice law in Florida, Washington, D.C., and before the United States Supreme Court. This is an unusual combination. Mark graduated from Mercer Law School with honors, which included the study of law at Oxford University in England. He has also studied mediumship in England at the Arthur Findlay College for the Advancement of Psychic Science. Mark Anthony is the best-selling author of The Evidence of Eternity and Never Letting Go. His new groundbreaking book, Evidence of Eternity, is a major international bestseller, which bridges the gap between the spiritual and the scientific. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks, Dave. It is really great to be here.
Glad you could make it today, and I have a whole bunch of questions I want to ask you. And why don't we start out, we'll talk a little bit about your book. How does Evidence of Eternity differ from your first book, Never Letting Go?
Never Letting Go is a guide on the journey through grief, and it's been very helpful to people all over the world. In fact, it's now in half a dozen different languages, everything from English to Estonian, Slovak, Polish, Romanian, and I believe French, starting in 2016. And it's been recommended by hospices and grief counselors worldwide as being a guide on the journey through grief. I've also noticed that a lot of people are giving it as a present during the holidays for people who are facing the holidays without a loved one. And while I was on the Never Letting Go tour, Dave, I kept getting extremely profound questions from people. They wanted to know about how spirit communication works. Is there a scientific basis for this? They wanted to know about the levels of the other side. Are there different dimensions in the one we live in? They wanted to know about reincarnation. Do animals have soul? Are there karmic and other repercussions to suicide? Does God exist? My religion isn't really answering a lot of the questions. So I started compiling all of these concerns, and coupled with decades of research of my own and everything from quantum physics through human physiology. And so Evidence of Eternity was born, if you will, and it bridges the gap between the scientific and the spiritual by explaining spirit communication and the afterlife in terms of science, theoretical physics, human physiology, evidence, and showing how faith and science are not at odds, but in many instances on the same page.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I read Evidence of Eternity, and I found it very interesting. And because I read it, and because this is the way you've approached the book, I have a whole bunch of technical questions that I want to talk to you about today.
Super. I love text questions.
All right, let's just start out with vibrational frequencies, vibrational energy. Did any of the spirits ever talk to you about vibrational frequency, vibrational energy?
They do. They all talk about being energy, being pure consciousness. And I refer to the dimension or the universe that we live in as the material world, because we have substance and everything that we know has a limitation, a beginning and a middle and the end, and an end. And spirits talk about living in an infinite environment in a purely energetic field. So as best as I can and humans can understand it, that's what they've told us, is that they're immortal beings. We're all immortal beings, but we come in and out of the material world for limited periods of what we perceive to be time.
How about things like suffering? Is suffering important? You know, you see it all the time, right? Humanity, if humanity does anything well, it suffers.
Yeah, and humanity really gets an A+ when it comes to inflicting suffering on other humans. I was just watching a Thanksgiving special about the first pilgrims and how, you know, they came to the New World and immediately infected all the Native Americans with the flu and smallpox, and then, you know, not to mention and you're murdering them for their land. And then you look at what's going on all across the world, particularly in the Middle East. Buddha said it very well. One of the teachings of Buddhism is that life is suffering. Christ also taught that life is suffering, but it's all part of the journey that we must experience. So what I've seen in communicating with spirits, what they let me know, and thousands of times, is on the other side, there's no pain and suffering because they're pure energy. Energy doesn't get old. It doesn't die. It doesn't get sick. Energy is a constant. And we know this from the laws of physics, that energy is neither created nor destroyed, only transferred from one form to another. So it appears, Dave, that while living in the material world, we have to go through a number of experiences, many of which involve suffering, because it appears that we're supposed to be gaining experiences and learning things that you cannot when you're in a purely energetic environment and one where you're not subjected to what we know as physical and mental suffering.
Yeah, you know, that it makes sense. And that's kind of how I've felt too, that, you know, suffering's something that you really can't deal with anywhere else. And if we're on this path to wisdom, you got to get all the different aspects of it. And this is one place that we can feel that.
Yeah, yes, it is. And there's so many religions that believe in the archetypal hell, where you die and it's like either go up to God or going down to this deep, horrible level.
Right, where, permanently sometimes.
Permanently. And hell exists here on Earth. And one of the things that spirits have consistently communicated to me, and not just me, but to every medium that I know, and all the near-death experience researchers, the top three in the world have endorsed my new book, Evidence of Eternity, and which incidentally has been submitted for a Pulitzer. So,
oh really?
Thank you. It was just in the cover contest for Authors database, and they'll be announcing the winners for that. So it's getting a lot of recognition on several levels. But yeah, the near-death experience people, when I say near-death experience, the term, kind of, I guess, the slang that the scientists have invented, they call people that have a near-death experience near-deathers, okay? So for the benefit of the listeners who may not be familiar with what that means, an NDE, a near-death experience, is somebody who dies and their consciousness leaves their body. There's a feeling of floating, going into the light, encountering loved ones who have passed, and then going deeper into that experience to encountering what they call the intelligence and God. As my friend Evan Alexander explained to me, even the word God is too limiting in a near-death experience, which I've had and both my parents have had. So
you've had a near-death experience?
Yes. When I was probably about 3.5, 4. I stopped breathing. I went into convulsions. It was really, really horrible. My dad was away on a business trip, and I got really, really sick, and I stopped breathing, and my mom scooped me up in her arms, and she ran out in front of the house. We were living in Orlando, Florida, and she started screaming, "My baby's dying. Help me, somebody." And the weirdest thing, Dave, which I don't believe in coincidences, but I do believe in synchronicity, an off-duty fireman happened to be going for a walk, and he ran over and he started doing compressions on my chest, and they got me breathing enough until the ambulance came. Then they lost me another couple times on the way to the hospital. And I remember a lot of it because I remember all the screaming and the hoses and the ventilation, and then we got a pulse. But I recall separating and going into this beautiful environment, and it was like blue and white, and there was these beings there. And when I say beings, they look like people, but they're sort of the outlines of people, like liquid. The way I can describe it, you ever seen Academy Award? You know how that kind of has that outline of a person look? That, but sort of translucent. And they were real nice to me. And they were like, you have to go back. So I remember having that. And both my parents have had near-death experiences. Well, in interviews with these individuals throughout the world, they all talk about reincarnation being real. And near-death experiences have been conducted in survival of consciousness studies in the U.S., Canada, the U.K., France, Holland, Italy, Russia, Australia, India, and South Africa, to name just a few of the places. And everybody all over the world has the same type of experience. Where there's a difference is when they talk about God, because what happens is Hindus tend to see Vishnu, Shiva, Hindu deities. Japanese people will see Buddha or Shinto deities. Christians tend to see Christ. And what we think this is, they're all encountering the same entity. It's just that when we're going from a finite perspective, a finite level of consciousness, and making that transition from a finite material world being into an immortal living spirit, we are encountering the infinite and tend to anthropomorphize it. In other words, give it a human face so that we're able to understand what we're encountering better. Because when I've worked with spirits, and what the near-death experience researchers say what they like about my work is I take up where their trail goes cold. Spirits let me know that, well, you know, how you perceive God is nice, but it's so much greater and better and beautiful than that. So it's really quite a fascinating field of study. And it's nice to see that particularly in the last 40 years, our technology and the scientific method have evolved to the point where we can now begin to scratch the surface of understanding infinity.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We had Dr. Long on about a month or so ago, and I noticed he was one of the recommenders of your book. Interesting guy, interesting subject matter.
Yeah, he is a great guy. He's got such a good sense of humor too. He is a really, really brilliant man. And it's so funny because I wish I could have put one of his quotes on the back of my book. He said, "I kept losing sleep when I was reading it because I didn't want to go to bed. I just kept reading it." And it was like, that was really a nice thing of him to say about Evidence Eternity.
Exactly. Hey, change subject a little bit. When our departed relatives and friends, when they die, are they aware of our life as it continues on?
Yes, they are, Dave. And in Evidence of Eternity, one of the concepts that I've developed is frequency beacons. And I describe the energetic connection between everyone, like you and your loved ones, both on this side and the other side, as being like a three-dimensional spider web. In other words, you're tethered to the people that you love. And when someone transitions to the other side, in many ways, that tether becomes stronger because the spirit is no longer limited by a human body. So while they have the ability to adjust their frequency from the higher the higher realm, if you will, the other side, to be aware of what's going on with us, they're not with us 24/7, but they can be here like instantaneously. For example, let's say you're thinking very heavily about someone you love who died, and think about how a spider web works. If something hits it, there's a vibration that goes along the web. So all of a sudden, the spirit starts feeling that, and it'll be like, oh, Dave's thinking about me. So he or she will adjust their frequency and then be there with you. Conversely, they can send emissions to us. People say that, gosh, since my cousin died, every time I think about him, I look down at the ground and I see a quarter or a nickel. Well, it's not that the spirit's making that particular thing materialize. It's that they're directing your attention to that. Or you turn on the radio and there's that song that makes you think of your mom who passed. And it's like, wow, why is it that all of a sudden this happens to me? Or, oh gosh, I'm smelling her perfume, but there's no source for that. These are all frequency beacons. And one of the things that I've done in Evidence of Eternity is redefine mediumship in terms of 21st century understanding and the internet age, using new terms and concepts, because all of our understanding of it was developed in the Victorian era, and it's time to progress and bring our understanding of spirit communication into the scientific age.
So this really means that every being has its own unique frequency signature.
Yes, that is an excellent way of putting it. And it's like we all have separate fingerprints. Even giraffes, there are no two giraffes in the world that have the same spot pattern on them. Every being is unique. And human beings, I think, go even further because of our consciousness, or rather our, let's say, our potential. Because there's a lot of lack of consciousness going on in this world with all the hate and violence and fanaticism and just, you know, absurd behaviors. But God's gift to all of us is our individual uniqueness. And I love the way you put it. We all have a unique energy signature, our unique frequency.
Now, what do spirits do? You know, they have a lot of time up there. They don't eat. They don't sleep. At least I don't think so. What do they do to keep them busy?
I've asked, and the response, and it's a frustrating response, is, well, you couldn't understand. And, one time I was like, you know, I'm tired of hearing that. Tell me. And they said, it's about evolution and growth of the soul and learning. And we're experiencing things that you can't even comprehend. We're able to move at great speeds, and we're capable of being part of everything everywhere. And then I started seeing, and this is observations that I'm working on now, and one of the things I discuss in Evidence of Eternity is the collective consciousness of the other side. Right. And as a joke, this one host of a show, he goes, sounds like the Borg collective from Star Trek. And I started laughing. I said, well, yeah, but it's not quite so drone-like and emotionless. But I've noticed that when I'm doing gallery readings, where there'll be, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of people in the audience, that, of course, I can't get to everybody in the audience, but a message will come in for somebody, and we know it's for that person because of the evidence which comes through, but then the messages that are transmitted to me resonate with two or three dozen people in the audience, and they come up to me afterwards. They said, even though that was that woman's uncle, you know, Paul, gee, it really sounded like something my brother would say, and it hit home with me. And what I'm beginning to see and understand, Dave, is that the other side is a collective consciousness. And while cousin Paul may have disconnected from that consciousness to transmit a message to a particular person in the audience, Paul is in touch with all of the other people's spirits over there, so it's almost as if it is a universal message targeting a specific group of people for a particular reason. And it's like, so that's how it's working. Because I've had so many people say, wow, I didn't get a reading, but it really, really made me feel better. And so I've been documenting this now for a couple years, and I noticed this about 10 years ago, and that's why I wrote the chapter Multiple Meaning Messages in Evidence of Eternity, where a spirit may emit a message to me, but it may have five or six levels of significance. And we know that the military is capable of sending a transmission, and then encrypted and piggybacked on top of that one emission are five or six other signals. Well, that's the nature of frequency transfer. But it's more than just from one spirit to one person. It can be from the collective on the other side to several people here at the same time. And it's because they're multidimensional beings, and they're much more efficient at transmitting information than we are at receiving it.
So to go back a little bit, what the spirits are doing during what we would call death, when they're not here, they have other areas that they're learning. It's like we can learn certain things here, like suffering and et cetera, fear, hate, and experience all of those emotions. But there's other things that they can do there, and that's what they do to learn other aspects of wisdom, if you will, of soul evolution.
It very well appears to be that way. And for the religions like Hinduism and Buddhism and spiritualism that outright practice and make an effort to understand reincarnation, the objective of reincarnating is to get to not come back here. And it's to go through a series of lifetimes to where you reach a higher vibration and there's no necessity of coming back here. And it's like, okay, that's nice. So then what happens? And the response that I got really shocked me. It was like, well, then you move to a different dimension and you start it all over again in what you call another planet. And I'm like, really? Oh my God. You mean we got to do all this again? Except we look like ET or something? You know, and the response was, why do you worry of such things? You need to focus on what you're doing, where you are, because this is the way things, this is the way, they talk about the way, and they said it's nothing to worry about. It's actually a very beautiful and very wonderful thing. So, you know, that one I can't verify because there's no evidence now to substantiate that, but it certainly makes for an interesting point of discussion.
It certainly does. Let's go to auras. You say all beings have an aura, and what is that? What is our aura?
An aura, I like the way you say it, aura. You say aura, I say aura, but it's the energy field. For example,
what energy field?
Well, look at a candle, look at a light bulb, and right around the source of the light, there is like a halo, a light emission. Well, we have an energy field in our body. We know the brain, the nervous system, the heart all operate on electrical impulses. So the energy that makes us alive, to some extent, has an electrical component to it, but it appears like there's something more at work than just that. And so we emit energy. Well, so do plants, so do animals. And it's all part of vibration and frequency. So things emit an energy signature. And it gets back to what we were talking about earlier, how every unique being has an individualized frequency. Well, we all have individualized auras. Now, there are people who are very good at seeing auras, and we can all see auras. It's like if you're sitting in public and you sort of relax your eyes and you notice like an outline around people. Remember those real popular, I guess about 10 or 15 years ago, those pictures, they just look like a whole bunch of dots and colors, and if you did this thing with your eyes, you change the focus, all of a sudden a three-dimensional image would take place.
Yeah.
To see auras more clearly, it's utilizing that type of ability with your eyes. And auras tend to emit colors. The old expression, he's green with envy. People that start getting very envious tend to emit a green type of light, although there's different types of green. There's also a very healing green. Yellow. Oh, he's a yellow belly. That was an old expression for somebody who was cowardly, because people who express fear tend to emit a yellowish light. However, then there's an intense, what I call it, Easter yellow or birthday cake yellow, which indicates happiness. Then there are people like my father, who, thank goodness, is still here on this side, who can see when people are going to die. And he sees this black, he won't even describe it fully to me. He says it's horrible to see. It's like this black veil, this darkness around them. And for friends of mine and other practitioners that specialize in aura work, what they've explained and what my understanding is that is being able to see when someone's physical human life is coming to a close. So on one hand, that's negative. On another, it's an indicator of what's happening. And in Evidence of Eternity, I go into this in great detail about my dad and getting ready to go into battle in World War II and seeing some of his friends with that aura, and they never survived the battle. So it is a really fascinating thing. It also, it's not some hooey, booey, hocus pocus, because auras have been observed by people for centuries. When you look at particularly Buddhist and Hindu and Christian artwork, you know, it's like Jesus, the saints, and angels have a halo. Well, what do you think that is?
Right.
Those are early depictions of people with highly, you know, I'm sure if Jesus walked in the room, his aura would be like, whoa, you know, just be really, yeah. You know, high.
Makes you wonder what a near-death experience if somebody's aura goes dark on them or it doesn't, you know.
That would be a fascinating thing, but then you'd have to, you know, well, you very well may pick up on a black aura of somebody who's physically going to die, and then they come back. I don't know how you would get the test subjects to do that. Oh, you all look like you're going to die. Could you please line up over here? You know?
Exactly. It'd be a tough one.
Maybe
someday. Hey, in the book, you confused me on something. You said that time does not exist, and yesterday is tomorrow. And I believe you said that's how people predict the future. Now, I can understand how time is immaterial in the spiritual realm because, you know, no one ages, and we have forever there. But our souls are evolving, and I assume that that's a linear process. So if we're learning everything simultaneously, which I got from yesterday is tomorrow, it would all happen instantly. Tell me what you mean by yesterday is tomorrow.
That was something in a reading that a spirit transmitted. It was, as I recall the reading, it was this gentleman whose father, and his father had been a real science guy. He was either a space engineer or something like that. And he was talking about time not existing in the way that you understand it. So yesterday is tomorrow, where they're at. And then when you look at things that Einstein and other theorists, quantum physicists have said, is that we perceive time as moving in a linear fashion when it doesn't work that way. And from my understanding of the other side is what we consider to be the past, the present, and the future are all in the energetic sense going on simultaneously. Yet then we have spirits which come into this world to learn lessons because it seems to help them when they return, which then lends a linear quality to that equation. On the other hand, the Hindus throw a real interesting monkey wrench in the works when they say that what your next life will be when you reincarnate could be in what we determine to be the past. And it's like, ooh, now that's kind of cool. It's like, so my next life would be in the year 1715 by our reckoning. Goodness.
Yeah.
So it's hard to completely understand that, and I don't profess to have all the answers because nobody does. Nobody does, at least nobody in the material world does, and God certainly does. But I know it gives me insights. But it is fascinating when you start looking at the string theorists talking about time not existing. I remember when I was a little kid in Catholic school, and they said that God always was and always will be. And I remember one time I was getting all nervous trying to get my mind to comprehend that, and I couldn't. And my mentor, a very, very nice priest, an elderly priest from England, Father Donnelly, he said, Mark, that's because our brain can't do that, but our spirit can. So it's very fascinating.
Yeah, that is interesting. I don't get it, but then there's a lot of things I don't get. So what are you going to do?
Maybe Stephen Hawking gets it. So, you know, one out of every 10 billion people.
There you go. You know, when I look at people predicting the future, I some people have. I mean, Edgar Cayce certainly has had an amazing track record and something like that, but I look at it more as predicting the probability of the future, and you know we all have free will, so you know there's a good chance you're going to do something, but it's not probably 100% chance you're going to do things, and therefore predicting the future is a probabilistic type of thing, not a definite type of thing.
That's entirely possible. That's entirely possible because I've heard some people say how the future is always changing, and then there's the predestination school of thought that everything that happens is set forward ahead of time. And then there's other people like myself who believe there's a day we're going to be born and a day we're going to die, but what happens in between, that's up to us. So yeah. There are different schools of thought on that. And predicting the future is fascinating. It's not something that I quote-unquote do, although it is something which has happened to me on many occasions. And what I found like during readings, because my specialization as a medium is to facilitate communication between between somebody here and somebody on the other side. And many times things come up that don't make any sense to the client, you know, and I tell people, instead of going right to no, it's better to say, I'm not sure, let me think about it, than no, because some people get on the no train. Right. I have had thousands of people tell me that after the reading, there was a lot of things they didn't understand, and then things that came through actually happened to them later on. One of the most gripping and poignant was I kept getting a date, and there was this couple who came to me, their son had died, and I kept getting this one date, and it didn't make sense to them, and they came to see me like 6 months later, and they said, you kept talking about this date, our son's best friend died on that date, which was a month after we had the reading with you. They're really, you know, astounding thing is that boy's spirit came through in that session. Now, I did not get that date with so-and-so was going to die.
The boy's spirit, he was alive at the time.
No. I'm sorry. In the second reading, their son and his friend came through. But in the first reading, when their son's best friend was alive, he kept giving me a date, and that was the date that his best friend was killed tragically.
Okay. You mentioned in the book that the spiritual world has different levels in it. And I think you used a reference to somebody on the top of a hill and the bottom of the hill. Talk about that a little bit.
It appears that the other side's a continuum. And it, just like an AM or FM radio dial, there's a lower frequency, let's say an 88.5 on the FM dial, than there is on the higher end, which would be 107.9. And I had a reading where a young woman killed this older gentleman in a horrific car accident, and did it because of total negligence and disregard, and then just sort of slimed her way through the legal system with, you know, her family had a lot of money. And when the spirit of the grandfather who was killed came through, I saw him standing at the top of a hill and the girl who killed him at the bottom of the hill. Well, she had died horribly of cancer a couple years after she caused the motor crash that killed this gentleman. And the last thing that she said before she died was how guilt-ridden she'd been, although she pretended like she wasn't. And so what this gentleman said is he's in a higher frequency, she's in a lower frequency, and her asking forgiveness of the family members here would help her ascend to a higher frequency. And that's just one reading that I've done along those lines. I've had so many instances where, all right, let's make a more drastic example. Mother Teresa, okay, she's going to go in on a super high frequency.
Right.
I mean, you know, when you take care of dying lepers in the gutters of Calcutta with a total selflessness and devote your life to helping others that nobody cares about, I mean, that's some pretty beautiful work.
Right.
And then there are your Osama bin Ladens, okay, that spend your whole life hijacking a religion to justify hatred, bigotry, and mass murder. People like that, they go to the other side, but they're not on this higher level. And these deluded religious fanatics that think by running around screaming God is great and machine gunning down unarmed and innocent people, first off, that isn't about God. Because when a message of a quote-unquote spiritual nature comes to you, if it doesn't contain love, then it isn't about or for God. It's coming directly from the human ego. And the human ego is a fear-based thing that is always looking to justify self as center of the universe behaviors. And if you do something negative or horrible to another person, it's not because, quote-unquote, the devil made me do it. The devil's within, and it's because you're acting as me, 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 as opposed to out of love. Somebody that completely loves and is compassionate and kind would never open fire on a group of unarmed people. That has nothing to do with God.
Right.
And so that's part of what's happening vibrationally. So the people that get the enlightenment, the enlightened and the compassion, the Christ consciousness, the Buddha consciousness, the white light, whatever you want to call it, where your personal connection with God leads to peace and love, compassion and understanding, that's the higher vibration. The people that put themselves as the center of the universe and then justify it by wrapping themselves in a holy shroud of a religion, that has nothing to do with God. And so that is a lower vibration. And it appears that no matter what we do, either on this side or this side, there's no escaping the repercussions of it either on this side or the other side.
Okay. Now, how about, there's different levels in the spiritual realm, it appears. How about, are there different realms, spiritual realms?
It's entirely possible, and I don't discount anything, because I've encountered a lot of non-human spiritual intelligence, and I don't just mean animal spirits, because animal spirits tend to be somewhat aligned with the realm that or the frequency that human spirits are in. But I've encountered non-human intelligences when I was in Japan, when I was in England, and here in the United States on investigations. The Japanese Shinto religion. Japan's a fascinating country because you can be a member of more than one religion at one time. That's what I love about Japan. You can be a Buddhist, a Shinto, and a Christian. It's like they even have the word Merry Christmatsu. It's been incorporated into Japanese. The Shinto religion, they talk about kami, K-A-M-I, and kamis are spirits. They're looked at as deities, and they seem to frequent particular locations. So, you know those Japanese things, they call them torii. They're like these wooden structures with the arching wood that kind of curves upward. Those are Shinto shrines.
Right.
And when I've encountered beings like that, you get a certain feeling. I know it's a spiritual entity, but it's not a human one. And it's not necessarily a malevolent or negative thing. It's just different. When I was in England, I remember somebody said, oh, there's a fairy in this part of the woods. And I'm like, yeah, right. You know, and I'm walking out there, I'm like, whoa, there was something there. And it was a human intelligence. And then I was at a paranormal investigation at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, and I encountered several energies, and it appears that there are spirits that are aligned either with plants or the earth or maybe animals, and they're different frequencies. So it appears that they're in a different realm. It's just that their realm intersects. Now, let me answer your question directly. The electromagnetic spectrum, we live in it because we can see visible light, which is, if you think of the electromagnetic spectrum, think of a yardstick. And what we can see of it is a piece of dental floss. So lay that piece of dental floss on the top of the yardstick. Well, within the electromagnetic spectrum are radio waves, microwaves, gamma waves. There is AM radio, XM radio, FM radio. There are a whole slew of different frequencies and vibrations, all of which intersect us and are going on all around us. It's simply we can't perceive this. Well, this isn't some airy-fairy woo-hoo thing. Earlier this year, NASA talking about dark energy. Dark energy and dark matter comprise over 90-plus percent of the universe, yet it is invisible to both the human eye and our technology. So, yeah, there's a whole lot of different realms. What we're able to perceive is just an extremely minute percentage of that.
Okay. Now let's go back. You got us into things like these fairies and such like that. Do evil spirits exist?
You know, this is where I differ with a lot of my colleagues. I don't buy the hell, the demonic thing. What I think is that people tend to fear the unknown. And when you encounter a non-human spiritual intelligence, it feels different. And if you don't understand something, you tend to fear it. That's why, like, walking into an allegedly haunted house, you get cold chills and tingles. Well, a spiritual entity that may frequent or return there or for whatever reason, or a residual energy vibration, that's an energetic impulse that interfaces with your aura, your electrical field, which then results in a physiological response of tingling and cold chills, which is the same sensation we get in the fight or flight response. Therefore, we immediately assume this is evil, this is negative. And I tend to think that the whole demonic thing is way overrated. And I know the religious people, demons. So once again, they're coming from a primitive fear-based worldview. Yes. But when you start encountering spirits, I've yet to meet one that's like, I'm evil, you know, and it's like, yeah. You know, and if you feel that way, then just ask for the white light of God to envelop you and surround you, and any negative type thing's going to leave.
Seems to me that evil doesn't exist. Ignorance is ubiquitous, but evil, you look at people that certainly appear evil, but they're doing things that if they had the wisdom that they need, they'd never do these things. And I look at it as ignorance, not evil.
You know, that's I like that, Dave. Ignorance, not evil. I remember one of my mentors years ago, because I used the word evil, she says, no, use the word negative. You know, because there's some people that I think are evil. I mean, I've been a criminal defense lawyer. I've met some people that would definitely qualify for evil. But somebody pointed out to me once that, even Stalin had a dog he liked.
So. Right. There must have been some ray of something there on the positive side. Hey, dreams. Are dreams important?
Absolutely. For a lot of reasons, if you look at it strictly from a physiological standpoint, the organ, which we refer to as our brain, apparently requires dreams. It's sort of like it cleans it out in the neurological sense. But when we look at dreams as a conduit for drifting into an altered brainwave frequency that enables communication with the other side, they're extremely important. And the significance of dreams has been noted at least since biblical times. I mean, when you have Joseph interpreting the dreams of Pharaoh and that's a prophetic and seeing the future, where Pharaoh said that seven fat cows come out of the Nile only to be devoured by seven skinny, and so on and so forth. And Joseph was able to divine the future, which is interesting because the people that believe that wholeheartedly a few chapters earlier in the Bible are all too willing to put people like me to death.
Yeah. How about all dreams? Are some dreams simply
simply
heartburn from too much pizza or something?
Yeah, exactly. I love that line in A Christmas Carol where Ebenezer Scrooge says, "You're just simply a piece of undigested beef." But many dreams where you have contact with the deceased loved one, you can tell the difference between a dream and a visitation, because a visitation is coherent. It has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and it feels extremely real because it is. And what happens there is when you go into the deeper levels of sleep, your brainwave frequency elevates. Spirits can see that, so they bring their frequency down. You get a frequency match, like tuning into, Common Sense Radio. You know, you got to get the right frequency, and right. The spirits see that, and they get their frequency aligned, and they can come in and give you a message. And oftentimes, it'll be a conversation in a place maybe that you like, the garden or a particular area, and it's very poignant and very heartfelt. And that's the other side reaching out to help us.
When you see a spirit, do you see it, or do you hear it, or do you feel it, or do you do them all, or does it vary depending on the experience?
All of the above, and it also tends to depend on the spirit. Very artistic people will give me a lot of colors and conceptual things. People that were very scientific will give me some more of data-like information. Spirits tend to communicate like they did when they were here. So if they were real blunt and to the point, they can be like that. If they were very subtle and withdrawn, but I see things, hear things, and feel things. And when an image comes in, I'm not quick to rush to judgment. Let me tell you a quick story. I was on a TV show in Long Island, and the host was a medium. And she asked me to do readings for people in the audience. And this one woman stood up and I said, there's a man coming through, and I'm seeing him in a uniform and a badge. She goes, my father was a police officer, okay? And I said, I'm hearing the word shots. Well, the medium I was working with, or rather on her show, she jumped up and says, I heard shots too. Your father was a police officer shot in the line of duty. And before I could say anything, the lady in the audience says, well, no, he was at a bar with his friends doing shots of tequila when he stroked out. Okay, and see, it's very easy to jump to conclusions. So that's why in a reading with me, I'll say, I'm getting this. It could mean this, this, or this. Does that make sense? And sometimes people go, oh, you're cold reading. And it's like, really? I was doing a reading for a woman, and an octopus, an image of an octopus came through. No, that's a strange thing to come up. Mm-hmm. I say, your husband's spirit is showing me an octopus. And she said, oh my God, we used to live in Belize on a canal, and we had this tank where we'd catch lobsters, and we'd put them in the tank, which was overlooking the canal. And one morning we came outside with our coffee, and an octopus climbed up out of the canal, slithered on up, and was grabbing our lobsters. She goes, do you think that's what he's talking about? And I said, well, unless you have another octopus story, I'm kind of thinking, yeah. So when people say, oh, you're just making this stuff up, really? An octopus?
Right. How long between lives? Any idea? Is there a rule of thumb? Is there, you know, any feel on that?
I don't know. There certainly have been instances, one of which I document in Evidence of Eternity, where a woman, Shanti Devi, in India, talks about a previous life where I think she died in the previous life 5 or 6 years earlier. So it appears there are people who come back pretty quickly, and then there are other people who it would be in our reckoning maybe a century or more. So I don't know if there's any hard and fast rule. Reincarnation is a very, very complex topic, and it is fascinating. It is fascinating.
I had a whole bunch of questions on reincarnation to ask you, and we're not going to get them, unfortunately. But I do think you ought to say one more thing in regards to animals. A lot of people have pets, and their pets die generally because they have shorter lives. Do we see our pets in the afterlife?
We do indeed. In fact, yesterday I did a reading for a gentleman, and immediately the first two spirits that came through were these two dogs, and one was a German Shepherd. Now, this was an elderly gentleman. He goes, oh, my God. He goes, that was the dog I had when I was a little boy. And the dog's personality and his quirks and what the dog died from came through clear as a bell. And then a dog that his daughter had came through, and very specific information. Earlier you spoke about Edgar Cayce. I'm going to be at the Edgar Cayce Center of New York City on Saturday, December 5th from 6 to 9 p.m., where I will be connecting loved ones in the audience with their loved ones in spirit. And if people want to find out about that, Dave, they can go to my website, evidenceofeternity.com, and it'll be right there in the news feed. Just click on there. It'll tell you how to get there and how to get tickets, because I'll be doing a gallery reading demonstration for attendees. And this is a particularly difficult time of the year for a lot of people, because they're facing the holidays without a loved one. Right. And if you know somebody who's going through that, both of my books, Never Letting Go and Evidence of Eternity, are very appropriate gifts, because they will help people understand the death and dying process better, and it helps to alleviate the suffering, because a lot of times we don't know what to give somebody. and, you know, flowers fade, and you can only say, if there's anything I can do, let me know, so many times. So do something very positive. And both my books, Evidence of Eternity and Never Letting Go, are the perfect gifts to help people coping with loss during the holidays.
I read Evidence of Eternity, great book, and I recommend it to all of my readers, our listeners. Mark, you were a fabulous guest. I got a ton of questions. I didn't get to them, but the ones I got to them, you were super on, and I really want to thank you for being here with us today.
Well, great, and I look forward to coming back. So keep those questions.
I will keep those questions. Take care and have a great holiday.
Thank you. God bless you, and God bless all your listeners.
Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. You can contact me through my website at davidgagan.com. I hope to hear from you in regards to your thoughts about today's show and ideas for future topics. Also, I cover all these subjects and a lot more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. Also, all the shows are available on iHeartRadio.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.